traveling the world searching for equestrians of all breeds. The journey starts now on the International Equine Network.
Hey, racing fans, Steve Wolf here for the Flying Turns, our podcast we have with the International Equine Network. And with me, our founder of the Equine Network, Scott Miller. How's it going? It's a little quiet by you these days, Scott.
Oh, yeah, Steve, that's what I was getting ready to tell you. I know you got a lot going on for us today on Flying Turns, but we got the last shipment of horses out up north to the tracks that that are opening. So we lost about 400 horses here to go up north. They left this morning about 6 o'clock. So
right, but that's, I mean, I know you have usually a couple people in harness racing that stay in the summer to get their horses ready for the Florida meet, but the what do you call it? Spit it out now. You still have plenty of equestrians there. You've got the day camp,
right.
You've got the riding and everything
right.
else. I mean, the farm, Sunshine Meadows, isn't closed like other places are. You cover most all breeds, so you've got plenty of action still going on.
Right. We still got about 350 horses here, you know, that are still here. We got a handful of horses from standardbreds from Pompano that are going to be with us for the summer. You know, so I'd say we're up at about around 375 horses right now. And it's kind of nice because we can get back in shape.
Yeah, it's funny when you say, oh, only 350 horses, and that's a light load. When Sunshine Meadows is at full capacity, how many horses are out there?
Yeah, we've got 750 altogether here, and then we've got almost 200 at our Palm Beach Downs facility, and then we have around 90 horses at our Delray facility, Delray Equestrian.
Wow. So between a few miles, you guys are have three facilities and that hold 1,000 horses. That's amazing.
Yeah,
absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Well, you know, what was interesting this year is we've got our standardbreds. The quality has gone up in our trainers that have come here. And, of course, you know all the trainers that are here. And when they were going out the gate this morning, they said, we'll see you in 3.5 months. And then that's when it really hit me. You know, we're not going to have long to get ready for them again.
No, exactly. I mean, it's going to turn right around come probably November or so, and you're going to have them all come back and hopefully some more. I think it's time for Big Steve to open up the pocketbooks and build you at least two or three more barns.
Yeah. Well, that's the last thing Brandon needs is more work. That guy's been working to death, you know, and he's done a great job with us here. So what's going on with the harness business?
Well,
how many tracks have we got?
Racing has returned, and it's returned in a big way. In our last show, we talked about the opening of only two tracks in North America, Scioto Downs and Northfield Park, who have taken advantage of early opening and have done sensational wagering numbers. I believe on Tuesday, Northfield Park did an afternoon race card, handled $2.3 million, you know, which is, you know, very, very good. But all that simulcasting money, which is the only thing out there because nobody can go to the racetracks with fanless racing, that pie is going to get split up big time because by the end of this weekend, there will be 17 tracks in North America racing. And
Ooh.
More to come. And,
yeah.
and just to give you an idea, I made this list in alphabetical order. Buffalo Raceway started Wednesday night. Charlottetown and PEI starts tonight. Dresden Raceway starts Sunday. Exhibition Park in Canada starts Saturday. Georgia Downs starts Saturday. Grand River Raceway starts Friday. Hanover Raceway starts Saturday. Hawthorne Racecourse they go on Saturday. Hiawatha Horse Park, that's on Saturday. Hiawatha Downs, Saturday. The Meadowlands, which everyone's been waiting for, starts Friday night. Mohawk Raceway, which is going to be big, starts Friday night. Northfield Park, which is already underway. Redo Carlton in Ottawa starts Sunday. Scarborough Downs started on June 1st. Scioto Downs is already underway. And Little Toro Raceway up in Nova Scotia starts Friday night. So that makes a total of 17 harness racing tracks in North America. This action is getting underway with action this weekend. So it's great for the horse people. My understanding is, and then the Meadowlands, which is now filled two race cards. I think they had like 700 horses enter for the first two nights of racing. But then the Meadowlands qualifiers, they have 26 qualifying races on Saturday morning.
Saturday?
So between 26, it's sort of like nobody was doing anything for the last few months due to the virus. And all of a sudden, at the snap of the fingers, there's, you know, literally over thousands of racehorses ready to go. Right. I mean, Mohawk Raceway is jam-packed, too.
What about Pennsylvania, Steve? Have they got any further along the line?
That was the next spot was talking about. There's only a couple jurisdictions that have not given permission to race, even with fanless. And the main one is Pennsylvania. The Meadows in Pittsburgh, they're gonna have qualifying races, I believe, this weekend. But they still don't have a date in sight. There was talk about, you know, towards the end of June. And this all is because of Governor Tom Wolf, whether he's holding horse racing up for ransom, because he wanted to take most of their slot money for a school scholarship program he had going. But none of those tracks are able to race yet and don't even have a date in mind, which is very, very, you know, very tough. I mean, horsemen are going to are losing big races and opportunity for their horses. They're cutting back on how many legs of sire stakes and stuff like that. Pennsylvania is not the only state. Also up in Massachusetts, there is no date yet for Plain Ridge Racecourse to reopen. And that's a big track. Although, which we talked about earlier, that Scarborough Downs is already open in Maine, but that's not open. And up in Quebec, the Hippodrome 3R, which is, you know, located an hour and a half away from Montreal, in Quebec City, they have not gotten permission yet. And I'm told that's because Montreal is the epicenter for most of Canada in the coronavirus.
Right, right. Well, you know, Steve, what a lot of people, you know, here we're talking about, you know, how much money is being wagered and, you know, purse money and all. But what our listeners, you know, we want to let them know that this is affecting the economy in a good way now, because all these people have gone back out to Saratoga and to, you know, New York, Kentucky, you know, and what have you, and they're going to, you know, shop at the malls and they're buying in the restaurants and the grocery stores. So, you know, it's going to be a good jump start, you know, for those local communities. And hopefully...
Absolutely. It's much needed push. And we have to be honest here. There's only so many dollars in simulcasting revenue. Our fans need to understand that in thoroughbred, quarter horse, and harness racing, the racetracks earn maybe on average 18% to 20% on every dollar wagered at the racetrack when there's live racing going on. But when you have simulcasting and you have to divide that money up and the shares of, even though you're sending out the signal, you're actually making, instead of 20 cents profit on the dollar, you end up with 3%.
Right.
So you've got to handle a lot more money to be able to cover purses. And I don't think any of the tracks, you know, are going to be able to really do that in the beginning. until they get fans to come back and get us, you know, totally established and the virus behind us is when they can, you know, get racing going again and for the racetracks to make money. But for the horsemen, they're able to race. That's the most important thing. For the owners who have been putting up all this extra training fees and prep fees and everything, you know, while for the last few months are hopefully, you know, going to get some dividends back. There are some races that are canceled, and, you know, that's not good because, you know, you gear up your horse, you have the schedule already made, and now it's not going to happen.
Right. Well, let me ask you, what about Saratoga Harness? I know the thoroughbreds have opened up.
Well, in New York, I'm not sure of the Saratoga status. I know Tioga Downs and Vernon Downs have their dates. You know, they're getting ready to go. Right. But poor Yonkers Raceway. I mean, Belmont opened yesterday, I believe. This was their first day, Scott.
Right.
Now, Belmont is open, but, of course, they're out in Long Island as opposed to Yonkers, which was an epicenter for the virus, one of the big players in all of the nation.
Right.
Came out of Yonkers Raceway. But I know that they're working diligently to get everything ready to go. I mean, in order to open up there, they're going to have to make an awful lot of changes and virus protection. And they're doing that all over. I mean, every groom, trainer, driver who was going to race at the Meadowlands, and I believe at Mohawk Raceway, had to go and be tested for coronavirus before they could go in. In fact, there was a great picture of the general manager, vice president of racing at the Meadowlands, Jason Settimore, and he was at the stable gate helping take temperatures of, you know, everyone driving in with their horses for qualifiers.
Yeah, making them work.
Yeah, there's a lot of hoops that have to be jumped through, but so far everything has been good. Northfield Park, Scioto Downs, everything has worked well with the procedures they have in place, which all the other tracks will be doing. I have not heard of anyone testing positive, you know, that was coming in to race or was denied getting into the facility. So,
yeah.
I mean, everyone, all the horsemen are, you know, doing everything they can, everything they're required. And racing's coming back, but you just got to watch it on the computer.
Well, the reason I was asking, you know, about the Saratoga Harness, because that's a crucial part of Saratoga in August. You know, they race at nighttime over there, and the daytime they race the thoroughbreds. And last year at Saratoga, they had a 39-day meet, and they averaged 27,000 people a day at that meet last year. And then, of course, a lot of those people stay over, and they go over to the harness at night, which is just right across the street. So, you know, that's a huge amount of people that aren't going to be in Saratoga to watch the live race, you know, but still,
and that's,
you know, what's going on.
Going to be, I mean, Saratoga, I think, is going to be lucky if they can open by the end of June, and in which case, I don't know, phase two or whatever you want to call it of letting fans come back into the stands is, you know, of course, is going to be based with the casinos and the slots being able to open. In fact, I believe they told the in Pennsylvania, they said some of the tracks casinos could open with 50% occupancy, but still hasn't said anything about racing.
Right, because, you know, like at Saratoga, just with thoroughbreds alone, they've got 1,000 horses that move into the track, and they got 800 backstretch workers. And then you got, you know, like I said, right across the street, you have, you know, the harness people. And, you know, I just don't see how they're going to do it because, you know, if you've ever been to Saratoga, you know, it's a small town, and you can be on top of each other when there's just 300 people there.
Well, you know. I was just going to say, between the two racetracks, you're looking at, a few thousand people minimum, just to have racing without fans, and they're going to be, of course, throughout town and food and other entertainment other than the racing. It's going to be a situation where people are going to begin to have to keep social distancing, but be together. I mean, let's face facts. How many thousands of people have been at all these marches and stuff the last few days? We ought to see how those corona numbers come back.
Yeah, that's going to be a very difficult statistic to get, because you got so many people coming and going from in and out of state. And I think that's what they were worried about up at Saratoga. You know, they've got so many people that come around, you know, from out of state. It makes it difficult for them, you know, to kind of control it and all. So what's our...
Go ahead.
What is our first big harness race that we can look forward to watch on TV?
Well, I'm not sure in the stakes schedule, because everything is still being decided. In other words... I'm going to have to do a little bit of research and get back to everyone on that. I'm not sure of the first really big stake coming up. I know that dates like the Hamiltonian, the second Saturday of August, and the North America Cup is going to be taking place. That's at Mohawk Raceway at the end of June 30th. But I'm sure there's going to be numerous... state sire stakes taking place, you know, right away. That's going to be in the next week or so. I mean, they're going to get racing under their belt at a lot of these tracks, but they're going to have to start their sire stake programs right away, because their three-year-olds should have been racing already in May and in June. And now with the two-year-olds, ironically, of the 350 horses entered to qualify on Saturday at the Meadowlands, only four of them were two-year-olds. They were totally expecting to have, you know, probably five or six or more races for two-year-olds, and they only had four horses entered, which is very surprising, because, you know, they're only a couple weeks away from their stake races, and these two-year-olds, especially in harness racing, they need to have what they call baby races, where they race against each other, no purse, just a qualifier, but it can be put on as an official record if the horse takes a good mark, the winner. But these races have to go. These two-year-olds need to be educated, and that takes a couple weeks minimum before they're going to start racing. So there's going to be a lot of pressure on the horsemen to, you know, turn everything up, and because if not, they're going to miss more opportunities, you know, that are going to be, there's going to be less stakes opportunities for these horses. So in order to try and get back, and remember, people paid as much as $1.1 million for yearlings. They want to have places to race for.
The reason I'm asking so much about these big stake races, there's a couple guys I know that went up to Saratoga, you know, with the harness. You know, they're waiting to get up there and, you know, start hitting the groove. And it was kind of funny through the conversation. A lot of people don't know it, but last year the people count in Saratoga that lived there was 28,212. And then you literally had the whole city attending races at Saratoga Harness and the Thoroughbred track is 27,000, you know, and they can't wait to get back to the racing up there so they can start making money, you know, and help the economy and the city, you know, come around like they are at Churchill and, you know, Santa Anita and all the other places. And we were talking about, you know, what big stake races would be coming up, and that's why I asked you the question. And now the second part of that question is, has the harness industry made any headway with the television networks to broadcast, you know, racing?
Yes, those races that it's mostly with CBS to get to be broadcast, that's already etched in stone. And fortunately, they don't start until July, and that is with the Meadowlands Pace and the Hamiltonian, the Little Brown Jug. I mean, these races are in July, August, September. You know, those races are all set, and there's been no changes in any of that.
Now, do you know if, with the Thoroughbreds, the TV contracts that they negotiated, you know, came out to really benefit, you know, the horsemen, because they got a little better deal than they did in the off season, because, you know, like right now, there's no college football, baseball, there's nothing competing against it. So they kind of had, you know, the television networks up against the wall and got pretty much what they wanted. You know, and I didn't know if the harness people were doing the same, because it would be fantastic if they could get a lot of TV coverage.
Well, right now it's you know, what they have. I know the Breeders' Crown for a fact. That's a biggie, like the Hamiltonian for CBS, and that's already locked in too. But again, that's not until the end of October. In actually, it's at Hoosier Park in Indiana. So I mean, we're glad that Hoosier's opening this weekend, and you know, we can see what the biggest stakes are.
Yeah. Well, you know, one of the things that, you know, we don't talk that much about, or haven't talked that much about, are the California tracks. How are the harness people doing in California?
Yeah, I have not. They were actually the last tracks to race that shut down because of the coronavirus. And again, there's been no word of racing returning there. While we already know that Los Alamitos and now Santa Anita, Del Mar, they're all coming back. And what happens there is, what do you call it? It's each county. Each county makes a decision on what happens. So hopefully, Cal Expo. I couldn't even think of the horses. Track's name, Cal Expo, should be, you know, online to get open.
Right. Well, you know, the thing that I was really thinking about is that now that the tracks are opening, trying to get back to normal, I saw where King has an online, they're going to have an online sales, you know, with their sales that are coming up, a fanless sale pretty much. And kind of like what Eric Cherry does with, you know, Ongi. And, you know, I was thinking about the Harrisburg sale. That's a huge sale. And wonder if those sales are going to come back and be strong like they were in the last few years. Or I wonder how this thing's going to affect the harness sales like them. You
know? Yeah, that's going to be a tough call, because I think it all depends on how these first couple months of racing goes. If everything gets back into the swing of a racing mode, the sales can do okay. Again, the sales also depend on these owners that are paying this money. They've all got two-year-olds racing. And if their two-year-olds are promising and going forward, then they're going to reinvest for the next season. If they're not having a good season, maybe they're not going to buy as many horses. We have to wait and see. You know, like I said before, that there's so many stake races that have been, you know, canceled or rescheduled. You know, it's very tough. I mean, so many things in June. I'm just looking here, like the Sun Stakes, $2 million in purses at Pocono Downs. That's been canceled. You know, like in Saratoga Harness, they were supposed to have on June 7th, $154,000 New York Sire Stakes, and that's been postponed. You know, they have to redo all the schedules, and a lot of that has to do with Yonkers Raceway and what's going on here. I mean, it really is a mess out there, and I'm trying to find a major stake that's still scheduled to take place, and so many things say all say postpone.
Right.
I'm looking, trying to find the biggest stake race that's coming up. And
well, you know, the thing of that is, Steve, is that what do these trainers do, you know, especially for the harness? You know, you want to race your horse right now. What happens, let's say, okay, they race on this Saturday, and then Monday they announce that, you know, that there's another big stake race is going to be run, you know, within 30 days. You know, it's kind of hard to plan your training schedule.
Well, in other words, this weekend or next weekend should have been the eliminations for the North America Cup. And they're usually three divisions at 50 grand each. Final goes for about $500,000. And they've had to reschedule it all to August. So all these, you know, great stake races, I mean, I'm still trying to find the first one here on the calendar. You know, okay, Buffalo Raceway is going to hold $100,000 sire stakes on June 17th. So that would be the first, and that might split into divisions depending on how many, this is for three-year-old pacing fillies, you know, how many enter. Yeah, it's very, right. Very difficult. It's all sire stakes that are taking place.
Yeah, but you know that's another thing too. Talking about sire stakes and all like that, how do you think that's going to affect you know, horse of the year and all the awards you know that are handed out at the end of the season?
I think that's going to be fine because the 2 year olds, you know, their races haven't come up yet, so they're going to be fine on their schedule. The older horses that it's going to take away. Decisions are going to have to be made by the harness writers on what will probably be lesser starts per horse and less earnings. So, but all the crucial big major stake races are all being postponed and rescheduled.
Yeah.
I see here. I know on June 21st, Tioga is supposed to be open. And they're going to have a big day on that Sunday, the 21st. They've got the $175,000 Roll with Joe open. And they also have the $75,000 first leg of the Graduate Pacing Series. And these are all for older horses. So,
okay.
Yeah, so. And then, you know, once they come and get with us, or once these horses start rolling and get into these stake races, then they'll be able to solidify the other dates. Before we switch to our guests, though, we want to talk about one more big item that happened in the last 24 hours, Scott, and that is the winner of the Elite Lot, last Sunday's most prestigious race in all of Sweden. The winner was Propulsion, an American-bred horse. Has done superior racing. He's made $3.6 million racing in Europe. But it looks like a late discovery that the horse was nerved or blocked, as some would say, and that they may take away his Elite Lot win and all his earnings that he ever made in Sweden.
Oh, so how's that going to affect the purse money and, you know, the awards and everything?
Yeah. It would all be taken away from him, and all the purses he would be declared disqualified from first to last, and then all the other horses would at least in the Elite Lot. I don't know how the Swedish government is going to allow the all the other races that he won in Sweden, but this is a strict rule that they have, and somehow it slipped by them, and this horse was able to race being blocked. And he should never have been allowed to come in this country of Sweden. Many years ago, a great trotter by the name of Friendly Face, he also had his front feet blocked. And he came over and won the Copenhagen Cup and he won another big race in Finland, and then he went to Sweden, and they wouldn't let him race.
Yeah. Oh, man.
He was. So they have precedent set already that the horses shouldn't be racing. So there could be a chance that they may have to take away all the earnings, which is going to open up lawsuits galore between the United States and Sweden.
Yeah. Well, that's something that we'll know, I guess, more on the next show about what all is going on. And so that would give us something to look forward to.
Yeah, big scandal.
Yeah, so don't tell me nothing about it until next Thursday.
There we go. But I know we have a guest, and I'll let you get on with her.
Yeah. Today we are adding a new person to IEN. Her name's Suzanne Walker. She's going to be working with our Keystone Montana's trailers, and we'll be able to call her and talk to her, and she can tell you any and everything about RVing, you know, where to buy them, you know, how to buy them, you know, the whole nine yards. She knows everything. Sue, welcome aboard IEN.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, we're glad to have you here because I know some about, you know, RVs and everything, but, you know, I know you know just about everything there is. So what can you do for our RV, our equestrian RV people? Tell us what you do.
So I'm in sales, and I can help direct people that are trying to figure out what they want to the right unit. I can find out questions for you if there's something that you can't find. You know, I have reps that I can call and find out something if it's something that I don't know either. So I'd like to just be able to assist people to find, you know, their right RV that works for them and to help them get on the road and enjoy their time.
Right, right. Well, you know, you can take care of any of our listeners or any of the questions anywhere in the United States, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Oh, fantastic. Now, I know one of the models that we were talking about that the equestrians really like, and it's like a home on wheels. It's got a lot of room for, you know, people. You can party in it. It's really a first-class operation. It's the Keystone Montana 37LK. What does that run price-wise? Do you know?
It's going to depend on, you know, what's going on in the market area and, you know, what you're trading in, how much you're putting down. You know, prices are depending on options that are on the coach. So, you know, each coach, you know, it's probably going to be an MSRP of $95,000 to $115,000.
Mm-hmm.
But you can, you know, work some deals out as you decide to purchase.
Right. Is there any certain time of year that you recommend to shop for RVs, the fall, the summer, the spring, the wintertime?
Well, everybody has their own season of selling, you know, and the seasons go different. You know, midsummer is usually small travel trailer, bunk houses sell a lot for the small families and stuff. But, you know, I'm in an all-year-round RV business. So, you know, there is no better time than others. I can tell you right now that all the 2020s around the United States are, you know, being clearanced and made room for the 2021s that are coming in. So this is a great time to get a 2020.
Right. Well, see, one of the things I like about the equestrian business is that, for example, I've dealt with a lot of RVs. And we have a wide range of clients. And we have clients that need a small trailer for one or two, or they need one like the, you know, the 3700LK. So would you be able to accommodate, like, say, the person that just needed a trailer big enough for one or two people?
Certainly. I take care of everything from, you know, pop-ups to Class A diesel pushers.
Mm-hmm. Well, good. And then on the other thing, would you be able to give them the right direction in campgrounds and stuff like that?
Campgrounds are kind of up to an individual. You know, there are different places I could refer them to that they can get a good listing of what might be in their area. But, you know, people like to camp different ways. Some people like the national parks. Some people like KOAs. Some people like, you know, just going around and finding some place that's off the grid, you know.
Right. Now, let me ask you another question. What about servicing the vehicles that you sell? Can you get them directed into the right spot?
Well, servicing is going to be depending on where you are traveling. You know, I know of a lot of good servicing places, but, you know, it's not every state. So, you know, it's going to depend on where they are. And servicing could be someone that they're calling a mobile RV tech to come to them, or it could be that they're bringing the unit into a major service center.
Right, right. Well, you know, that's one thing that I liked about what you do is you've got the experience and you know where to get our clients to and everything, and, you know, I'm glad that you're going to be, you know, working with us on this thing. We'll have you on the website with your phone number and your email, and that they
can,
you know, get a hold of you and get you in the right direction, because at IEN, we've been doing pretty good, you know, with, you know, trying to get everybody, all the questions answered. And then here in the last, I'd say, 6 months to 8 months, I've seen people wanting campers real bad, you know, all sizes, new and used. And do you have used campers too?
Yes, we do. And, you know, like you said, you know, especially during COVID, the business is just building in the RV industry because people are no longer looking to go on cruise ships and stay in hotels. They want to be in their own home that's on wheels.
Right, right. Well, you know, we were looking at the average of hotel rooms, you know, just in a lot of the areas that the equestrian events are being held at, and it's $97 and up a night, you know, and if you can get a room there, you're lucky, you know, and you might not even be close to the equestrian event. And so that's why the sales are really going through the roof. And I think maybe... when Steve takes his vacation this year, you might be able to sell him an RV to get him on the road. What do you think, Steve?
Yeah.
Sounds good to me.
I don't know that about that. That would be great. I wish I could, but I do have a question to ask. With,
sure.
You know, hotels and everything, you know, getting only open with so much occupancy, people are going to be RVing a lot. And let's say I'm going to Saratoga and it's going to be crowded in there. How many days can I go without having the hookup in an RV?
Every
and let's
unit
say
is
a Keystone
Montana.
Go ahead.
Yeah, every unit is going to be different. If you're going to be off the grid, you're going to need to have a generator. You know,
okay.
There are places that would allow you to stay and sit without being hooked up, but, you know, you really want to find a place that has the accommodations of water and septic to be comfortable, to you make sure that, you know, your air condition works the whole time. You know, a generator doesn't necessarily run an entire coach, so you want to make sure that you've got the right size generator if that's what you're planning on doing.
Okay, and I've seen, you know, the pictures and everything of the Keystone Montana, and it's awesome. I mean, it's a full size refrigerator and every cooking utensil. I mean, that was a fully equipped one, but it was a house on wheels.
Yeah, it's absolutely a beautiful unit. Yeah, very large or luxurious rear kitchen with a mid family room with plenty of seating and a nice bedroom where you've got a nice closet space and everything for traveling for a long time.
There you go. Well, I tell you what, Sam, have you got a phone number and an email that we can get a hold of yet? It'll be on the website this afternoon and all, but
sure.
If you want to get right to our listeners now, maybe that you can get a jump on them.
That'd be wonderful. I'd love to hear from you all. My name is Sue Ann, and my phone number is 941-544-7712, and currently I can be reached at the email of Dare to Dream, REI. It is DARE, the number 2, DREAM, REI at gmail.com. Love to hear from you.
Well, Well, I appreciate having you here. I know Steve's glad you're here, and Don and those guys are here. And you'll be able to take care of our guys out in California, too, you know, as well
yes,
as
sir.
Here in Florida and Kentucky and everything. So welcome aboard, and, you know, we'll talk to you next week on a couple of little projects I'm working on, and we'll see what's going on.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure being with you all today.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Steve, we got a new person on board here with us. This is fantastic.
Oh, no, I absolutely. I mean, we learned so much about it. I mean, I'm not that familiar with the RV industry, not realizing that our horse industry is major into it and that a lot of people have them, and they're just gorgeous, gorgeous units.
Yeah. Oh, you got that right. Now, Steve, back to the racing end of it. We know we got the Belmont is coming up on the 20th of June here in a couple of weeks. Then we've got the Derby on September 5th, and then the Preakness on the 3rd. And it appears
right.
that all the tracks have, you know, have gotten their TV contracts down, you know, that type of thing, and also getting back to, like, the harness and like, Fox Sports is doing a lot with the thoroughbred end of it. If we were to go to watch, like, harness racing from the Meadowlands, you know, would we have to go to TVG or Twin Spires, or is Fox Sports doing anything that you know of?
Well, TVG, which a lot of people have out there, they cover the Meadowlands when they're racing live. They'll also do some races from Woodbine Racetrack, but the majority of these major tracks have, if you just go to their website, like thebigm.com, or of course everyone can look up and see which racetrack, they're going to list right there whether or not they're going to show the races live. And in most cases, big tracks like the Meadowlands and a Woodbine, they do show the races live on their own website. So it's pretty easy to access it.
Well, you know, it's like this weekend, Fox Sports is going to be working close with Santa Anita. This weekend, we have the Santa Anita Derby, good preparation for, you know, the Kentucky Derby. And they drew a lot of seven horses all together. And, you know,
that's it.
Yeah, and that was it. So I've been kind of running down through the entries for the stake races upcoming. And what's interesting about the Santa Anita Derby that Mr. McCarthy's got two in, and then we go down to Bob Baffert has two in. And so this looks like that some of the trainers have, you know, kind of hedged their bets, and they've got horses ready for, you know, a lot of these big races. Now, I sure do like having two horses in a seven-horse field going for $400,000.
Oh, I know. That would be super. Well, yeah. we have sort of that equivalent in harness racing. It goes by the trainer's name of Ron Burke. And I know that he has, I think, in the first two nights at the Meadowlands, there's a total of 26 races, and I think he has a horse in 20 of them.
Yeah, wow.
And he dominates at many tracks. Scioto Downs, I think opening night, he won four of the 12 races. And the second night, you know, and of course, if you're driving for Ron Burke at that particular track, like a Chris Page, he ended up having eight winners over the weekend, six of them from Ron Burke. And the two that he won that were not trained by Ron Burke, Chris Page, one of them he paid $97 to win. I think the other one he paid like $57 to win. Whereas most of the Burke horses, you know, the other ones, the ones that he drives for Ron Burke, they were race favorites.
Well, you know, one thing about the thoroughbred end of it, the purse structure is a little different. and why, you know, they were so eager to either keep racing, you know, or get back to racing. And for example, like Santa Anita Derby Saturday, it's $400,000, you know, to you know, it's the purse on it. And then when you start breaking it down, you know, it's the winner receives $240,000 if he wins. Then 80,000 to second, you know, 48,000 to third, 24,000 to fourth, and 8,000 to fifth. So, you know, those owners are anxious to get back out to pay a lot of bills if you can get in the money, you know.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm looking here. I don't think in June there are any races, harness races, over 200,000 because they end up getting split. Even if they're listed for 175,000, if it's a three-year-old filly Pace in the New York Sire Stakes, that's going to be split, you know, into four divisions.
Right.
So
right.
There isn't any, you know, harness racing. You know, in comparing the thoroughbred is maybe a third of what thoroughbred racing has. In other words, thoroughbred racing has a $400,000 purse for their big race, like the Santa Anita Derby. Well, then the harness racing purse is only going to be maybe $150,000 at this stage of the game. And of course, purses at their tracks rely on handle, and the more handle kind of comes in, the more that's given to the purse structure, you know, to keep those races going.
Right. Well, you know,
so
Belmont,
we got to have action, and we need them to come back, and the tracks are coming back.
Right. Well, you know, yesterday Belmont opened up, and it was really unique. Everybody was kind of wondering, you know, what all was going to happen with Belmont, you know, or any of the tracks that opened up. And, you know, it was just amazing. They had a good handle there. They did over $10 million worth of business, you know, simulcast money, you know, for their races. And it's just amazing, you know, how they're coming back and all. And so I think maybe that once they get the standardbreds going, you know, and like the Meadowlands, they'll duck the heck out of that. Because, you know, that's close to the city there.
Well, I'm sure, but you also have to realize of that $10 million, the track is only making
3%. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, they went $10,972,000 is what they did.
So I don't know how much they gave out in purses, but, you know, they made a profit of $300,000 the day, which, you know, I'm sure they had some good purses out there. And you know what? They may not have made that much money, but they put on a show and they got the fans back. And,
yeah, exactly.
You know, it becomes a tug of war, Scott. I mean, there's, like I said, there's 17 harness racing tracks opening up. That means there's going to be close to 15 thoroughbred tracks up. Now, each of those tracks are going to have their fans. That's going to divide up, you know, with all the simulcasting money, you know, and whether or not the marketing teams are able to use social media to be able to get out to their fans and say, hey, we're opening. Please, you know, come play, have some fun, and do it all.
Right.
There's just there might be too many tracks right off the bat for you to choose from.
Yeah. Now, earlier today, Don was telling us that Las Vegas is starting to open back up.
Correct. And that's going to be, you know what? I think the racing people hope that they don't open up. Keep the casinos closed and let them bet on horse racing.
Yeah, there you go. But, you know, the thing of it is you know, what's tough on the horse industry is having the food venues, you know, open up. You know, that's the tough one is trying to get them up.
You're absolutely right. If you're almost any racetrack, let's use Saratoga Thoroughbred, 26,000 people. How many daily racing forms are they going to buy? How many are going to pay for parking? How many are going to pay for valet and all the food, how many hamburgers, how many dinners, lunches, whatever. Right. Racetracks really, really make their money off of their food concession and, right, and auxiliary, you know, stuff to play. And they're not going to have any of that.
Right. Well, you know, what's interesting is, here we go back to Saratoga again. Right between Saratoga Flats and Saratoga Harness, you've got like the Horseshoe Restaurant, and you've got a couple other restaurants. And what normally people would do is they get finished at the Flats and the Thoroughbred, and instead of driving over the Harness track, you walk across the street, you go have some drinks and food at a nice restaurant, and then you walk on over to to the Harness track, or you go to the Harness track and eat. And that was the exciting part about it. So I just don't know what we're going to do without all the amenities that go along with it. We need.
Well, I'm only looking at the racetrack perspective, but as per the towns and their locales, again, it all depends. I mean, the weather's been awful nice up north. So the outdoor restaurants have been able to make work things out with the government, their local community town halls, and they're able to, and in some cases, like in Delray Beach, they closed off one lane of the road to allow restaurants to put more tables outside so they can have more, people sit outside where they're much more comfortable. I mean, we were fortunate. My wife and I, we went out just last week. But again, we went to a restaurant that had a really beautiful outdoor seating area. And, we had a wonderful time. And inside the restaurant, there were maybe three tables out of 50 that were being used, whereas most of the outside tables were booked. We actually were able to get a reservation.
Yeah,
and it was great to be able to go out and eat. And I mean, I'm, other than grilling myself outside and burning the hot dogs and hamburgers and steaks.
Yeah, well, I was just thinking about tracks like Delaware Park and Monmouth Park. They have the and over at Tampa, they've got the outside picnic tables that are there. And, would be a good afternoon. You're 6 foot apart. You get to watch the races, so you can, do what you need to do. I don't know how they bet, if they're betting now at the windows, or just what they're doing. But, at least it's a good out.
Well, Monmouth Park is unique. The Meadowlands is opening Friday night. But yet Monmouth Park etched in stone, even before they had permission, that they were opening July 4th weekend. And now it looks like they made a mistake and that they should have waited and they could be open this weekend. They're going to lose a lot of horses who are anxious, a lot of horsemen that are anxious to race now. And they're going to go to Belmont or they're going to go to wherever they can to race. I mean, that's the big thing now. And Monmouth Park, if I was Monmouth Park, I would say, look, we're opening this weekend.
Yeah,
with fanless racing. Otherwise, they're losing the horses. They're probably gone already. I mean, these horsemen had to make a decision, and they're going to go someplace else, and they'll come to Monmouth when they open.
Right.
But by that time, if they're established at another track, and they want to ship in for a couple stake races, well, then that's what they're going to do, and Monmouth Park is not going to have the horse population they should have by opening this weekend.
Well, that's interesting that you say that. A lot of the tracks, the thoroughbred tracks, have limited amount of horses that a trainer can bring in. Now, I know it originally started out at Churchill where they could only bring 10 horses in, and I believe it was 5 personnel. So that's going to really affect, who's running where.
As we discuss it, I think more and more, and it's a bad mistake by the ownership of Monmouth Park. Granted, it was great that they put out the advertising, and then they're going to open and July 4th weekend, They did this a month or more ago, but now I think it's going to come back to vitamin butt hard because
We're losing you there, Steve.
Race of Belmont.
You know, one of the things that I was looking at earlier at the different tracks, all the thoroughbred tracks were getting anywhere from 9 to 16 entries per race.
Yeah.
And that's really good. That is really, really good, you know, for them.
It is, and we saw that right away at Tioga Downs, you know, with all the qualifiers. And now the Meadowlands, I mean, there's really, unless you have an invitational race, which can have just 6 or 7 horses and still be a top flight event. But every race is jam-packed with horses and also eligibles and full fields, and everyone's got a qualifying line. But still, it's going to make for some great betting. I'm sure the 44% average of winning favorites at a track are going to be definitely lower than that. As things get started off, because you know these horses haven't raced, and some of them, you know, maybe didn't win the qualifier or workout that they were in against, but boy, when they're ready to race now.
Right. Well, you know, that's like on Saturday up at Belmont Park, the Fort Marcy Stakes, which is a Grade Two for thoroughbred. It's a 9-horse field. Chad Brown's got 4 horses in it, you know, and
you're
looking
at
$150,000 purse, you know, and it's running.
But he's got 4. I mean, that's almost not fair.
No. How would you like that?
No, but
you know, when you go to your
shorter horses, that's fine. You get them where you can. But in cases like, you know, this for a stake race that he's got. How many horses are in the race? 7?
9. He's got 9
in the race, and he has 4 of them.
And he's got 4 of them. Now, the problem I had is
unbelievable.
Is one time when I was training, I had 2 horses in 1 race, and you know, the biggest problem that I had was the fact is I've got to tell one of the owners they lost. No, and why they lost.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. Yeah.
That's hard road to go.
We've all had that happen.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, if the horses are ready and they're eligible to that stake race, then God bless them for having that luck. And my God, well, he could finish. He could be the superfecta, right? Are they uncoupled?
Right, they're all uncoupled.
You know, Scott? They're all uncoupled.
Theoretically,
he could be the pick 4 right there in the race.
Right. Well, you know, up at Saratoga, they had a few years ago. Linda Rice was up there, and she had like 4 horses in the stakes race, and it's tough at Saratoga, you know, just to even win or hit the board, and it was the only trainers to ever do this was Linda. She ran first through 4th. All 4 of her horses took the whole thing. You know, so. Well, Steve, we're getting close to getting to the end of the show here. You know, I'm excited about next week and to find out about all the harness end of it, you know, because it looks like they got a lot of things going. We'll know who won the Santa Anita Derby. We'll have a good Derby report for next week.
Right, we'll have it. I mean, and I almost feel sorry for some of the people like Yannick Gingras. He's right now probably the greatest driver, him and Brian Sears. And on Saturday, they're going to have 26 qualifying rides, and then they're going to have 13 live races. So I'm sure they're going to need a whirlpool bath when they're done.
There you go. Well, next week we're going to have, you know, our Derby update and Derby report and get into a normal pattern here on IEN. And then I got a great surprise. I'm not going to tell you who it is, but we've got a show horse person of international and Olympic quality that lives right here in our own backyard, and I didn't even know it. And so we're going to have her, and she's got a great farm here, and she can update us on all the show industry, both domestic and international. So, you know, we'll get all the good stuff on that. Steve, thanks again for making us a good show. Don and the guys at BBS. You know, it's really been good. Makes our jobs a lot easier with guys like you around. So let us know what the
okay.
big scoop is next week, Steve.
Next week it is.
All righty, buddy. Thanks.